So that's why we got to get rid of them. The book says if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turn back to the list. See, this is why you got to have a written inventory. If you were trying to inventory this in your head, you would already have lost it. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Always before, I looked at it to see what those suckers had done to me. Today, I look at it from the angle that if I carry that resentment, it's going to cause me to get drunk. And I'm looking at it now from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing or others fancied or real had power to actually kill. And I read that and I thought, oh my God, how stupid can you be? All my life, I've been proud of the fact that I stand on my own 2 feet. Nobody tells me what to do. I don't need your advice, thank you. And I suddenly realize that other people have controlled and ruled and dominated my thinking as far back as I can remember through my resentments toward them. When I'm resenting them, they're controlling and dominating the way I think. They're controlling and dominating the decisions that I make. They're controlling and dominating my actual life. And if it's going to cause me to get drunk, I've given other people the power to actually kill me through my resentments toward them. And I said, man, you really are dumb. Because some of these people have been dead and buried in the graveyard for years. Been reaching out from the grave and had me with a yang-yang as far back as I can remember. And when I saw that, I said, to hell with them. I'm not going to let those people, alive or dead, live in my head rent-free any longer. I've made a decision to let God direct my thinking. If they direct it, God can't, and it's just that simple. And you know, a marvelous thing happened to me. We alcoholics fancy ourselves as reasonably intelligent people. Now, I don't think we're smarter than anybody else, but I think we're reasonably intelligent people. And we don't like to look stupid and dumb. And we see how dumb and stupid these resentments really are. How much we've let other people control or dominate our thinking for us, that looks dumb as hell. And about 95% of my resentments begin to automatically disappear when I saw the stupidity behind them. When I saw what he's doing and letting other people control me, about 95% of them begin to disappear. But if you're like I am, I had 2, 3, 4, 5 that were so deeply embedded in my mind that just seeing the stupidity behind them didn't get rid of them. So in order to get rid of those, I'm going to have a little extra help. It says, how could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So those that are deeply embedded and don't automatically disappear when we see what they're doing to us, we now come to the first prayer in the big book in step 4. We hear always about the step 3 prayers, the step 7 prayers. We never hear about the prayers that are spread throughout the entire book. The first prayer here is in step 4. Let's see what we can do about those kind of resentments.
We saw these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Can't heal a sick mind with a sick mind. Can't wish them away. Can't think them away. Well, this was our course. We realized that the people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Here's the first prayer. We ask God to help us to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Then, excuse me. When I got divorced from that first lady, I start thinking real good now. I said to myself, self, you're going to drink, and I know you are, and what you need now is a woman that drinks. I'm thinking good, because these women that don't drink are mean and ugly. I've just proven that. So I looked around the bars, and I started to find me a woman that drinks. Finally ran upon my present wife, Phyllis. And we were introduced one night, and she looked at me and said, well, Joe, you look like my third husband. And I said, well, my God, how many have you had? And she said, 2. I kind of like that, you know. So I've been watching her, and she drank, and she'd come into the bar about 5:30 in the evening and drink till midnight. And in Oklahoma, we had to go to private clubs to continue to drink. And we did that night after night after night after night after month after month. And I like this. She's my kind of woman, see. So we get married. And, boy, that was a big one. See, I had come out of that bad marriage with a list of things this long I wasn't going to let this next one do. And she'd come out of her bad marriage with a list of stuff this long that she wasn't going to let me do. And we're enforcing our list on each other and trying to stay drunk half the time. Nothing but trouble. But we got to where we couldn't even drink together. So we kind of made a deal. We split Tulsa right down the middle. 41st and South was hers. 41st and North was mine. And I don't bother her, and she don't bother me, and we meet at the house from time to time. So I got me a mobile home out there on the lake on my side of town, back out west, about 25 miles. And Phyllis didn't know anything about this. But one night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a knock on the door. Well, I kind of peeked out. Well, what she did was she just broke right in there. Embarrassed me in front of my girlfriend. Next morning, I got up, and all my stuff was thrown out on the lawn like it's supposed to be. Took my car, went to the bank, took out what little money we had, filed for divorce with a lawyer again, put a restraining order on me again after all I'd done to her. I mean, after all I'd done for her and her treat me like that. And I said, I'm going to drink as often as I want to drink, and I'm going to give a dang who knows it. And so I set about doing just exactly that. And after a while, I got sober, a couple of years later, I guess. And I was sitting in a bar one night, the Misty Dawn, and a beautiful place. And I had a real sick feeling in my stomach. It wasn't a throwing up sick. It was just sick, and I didn't know what that was. And I went out and got my car and laid down, slept a while, went to the home. And next morning, I got sober the next day. About a month later, I was in Apache, Oklahoma, to my first AA conference, second AA conference, excuse me. And there I met a lady from California. Her name was Alabama Carruthers. Some of y'all knew Alabama, I'm sure. Lovely lady. Everybody knew that Alabama loved her. At least I thought she did. And I loved her. She couldn't wait to see what was going to happen next. Always in a hurry. But she made a talk that night, and two things she said just went off in my mind like a thunderbolt. And one of them, she said, I have peace of mind tonight. And I said to myself, my God, I've never had peace of mind. I wish I had peace of mind. And she said she had a soul sickness. And that's the first time I had some words to put together that feeling that I sat on that bar stool with. A soul sickness. And that's what I had. And afterwards, I wanted to talk to Alabama. We got in the lobby of this old hotel. One by one, everybody went to bed. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. They left Alabama and George, my little black friend George, who was my sponsor then, and we were, he's laying over and sleeping in her lap. And I'm being able to talk to Alabama. And I said, Alabama, you said you had peace of mind tonight. How did you get peace of mind? She said, well, tell me what's going on in your mind. And I began to tell her what is going on in my mind and all the things that had happened to me up to that point. And she said, well, Joe, you're just full of resentments. I said, what's a resentment? She said a resentment is old angers and old hurts that are refelt over and over and over. And all that anger you intend to use on those other people, you're using it on yourself and you're making yourself sick and blaming it on them. And she had explained to me that me several different times. Finally got the message. I said, well, is there any solution for that? And she said, yes, there is. And those of you who knew Alabama, you know she had a purse that was about that big. And she went getting down in there, and she finally picked out one of these books and pulled it out. And she flipped over here to this page. She said, if you'll read and do what this says, she said it helped her and maybe it would help me. So I did it. I turned over to this page 551, Freedom from Bondage. And this is what Alabama had me to read that night. Third paragraph. She said, I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in the program. Many that I didn't recognize right away, for I'm slow to learn. They take many guises. But one was so outstanding, I like to pass it on whenever I can, and I hope it'll help someone else as it helped me. As I said earlier, self-pity and resentment were my constant companions, and my inventory began to look like a 33-year diary, for I seemed to have a resentment against everybody I'd ever known. All but one responded to the treatment suggested in the 12 steps immediately.
She made her inventory, saw how stupid they were. All but one of them disappeared automatically.
But this one posed a problem.